For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, the legacy, the legend, the lengthy link-ups from the car park at Old Trafford. As Sir Alex decides it's time, so actually it probably was 6 minutes ago, right kids, we say good night, and pay tribute to the legend, the legacy, etc, etc, etc. Meanwhile, as Man United get Moyes, and not just around the eyes, we look to the future for the club. And elsewhere in other news, there's midweek action. Wigan stuff up survival bid with Swans. Spurs get stuck at Stamford Bridge. We get the latest on the top four and bottom three races. There's post-playoffs and Portugal, the Champions League final. Sunderland Saints, of course, and a little look forward to the big event at Wembley this Saturday. All that and more in Football Weekly Extra. Well then, hey, history. Hair dryer today, gone tomorrow. So we'll take a moment to think about that then. And as we bring you our very own supplementary Goodbye Sir Alex, part one of today's show, featuring Scott Murray, who did a Joy of Six about Fergie recently.
I did.
Yeah, there you go. Jacob Steinberg, who minute by minute did the breaking news on Wednesday.
And still is.
And still is. Barry, the lone iconoclast, the man who says good riddance.
What?
Yeah, and a man who himself recently retired, Kevin Kilpan.
Yeah, not that recently now. Yeah, a few months ago, wasn't it?
Right,
yeah.
But there you are. But you can talk us through that whole retirement thing.
Okay.
Fantastic stuff. Oh, plus you know David Moyes.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah. Allegedly, yeah.
All right, excellent. Right, Scott then. We'll never see his like again as they appoint another hatchet-faced, intimidating-looking Glaswegian.
yeah, bad cover version. No, we won't. I mean, he's clearly the greatest manager, well, certainly the greatest British manager of all time, possibly the greatest of all time. I think people are kind of looking in the wrong place for why he's so good, though. They're sort of looking at the longevity at United, the trophies he's racked up there. But for me, like the actual trophy count, like in terms of rate of trophies gathered and the main trophies, is kind of second best to Bob Paisley for me. But where Ferguson trumps him is the fact that he took over a club that didn't have any momentum, which Paisley did. And he's done it at two clubs because people are kind of forgetting the fact that he was at Aberdeen and done all this before. So he's kind of got the best of Paisley and he's got the best of Brian Clough as well, I think, which is why I think they're the only two that you could compare him to and why he's probably the best of all time.
And yet, Barry, you say good riddance.
I didn't say good riddance. I've never said good riddance.
All right.
I'm a big admirer of Ferguson, you know, but he's a control freak who ruled with a fist of iron, didn't care about what people like me or other people who criticise, say, his belligerence or his boorishness or his lack of concern for what anyone thought of him. He spanned two or three different sort of phases of football, old school football and then new school football, right. You know, N-U-S-K-O-O-L, with, you know, all those fancy Dan foreigners coming in, dealing with players who earned way more money than he did, uppity young millionaires and multimillionaires, and coped admirably with everything. So, he deserves a lot of kudos, but, yeah, he wasn't perfect, was he?
No, indeed. And which of us is? Jacob, meantime, how did it feel to be chronicling history yesterday?
Well, comes a point where you've watched 5 hours of Sky Sports News on a loop where you start to lose your mind a little bit. But it was still, you know, it was a historic day. And I was saying to Scott earlier, it would be interesting in 27 years' time to see how many managers Manchester United have had by then. Ooh. You know, for many people, it would be the only manager that Manchester United they'll have known for to have managed Manchester United, which is just kind of a slightly surreal feeling at the moment that he's not going to be there next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, will there be a lot of people in the Premier League and you know, among the officials, etc., who will actually be a little bit relieved? It kind of reopens shifts the goalposts a bit.
Yeah, it could be. It's like, again, it's a new start, but yeah, I mean, he has intimidated, he has hurt, I don't want to say hurt, but he's hurt, he's got to a lot of people over the years, hasn't he? Mm. Over the years, certainly managers, other managers and referees. And I think now it's like that clean slate. Whoever goes in, it looks like David Moyes, but whoever goes in, it's a different animal that they're going to be dealing with, isn't it? And saying Sir Alex Ferguson over the years, you mentioned there what Jacob's saying, my whole playing career, virtually my whole life, I remember seeing United in 1990 when he was under pressure to keep the job. I think everyone talks about that. But he's a certain character that's managed to hold on to that club with an iron fist, and he's done it with such credit, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He's been a whopping great part of the landscape. Did you ever have run-ins with him yourself?
No, nothing at all, really. Met him very rarely, just obviously...
You scurry past him on the wing?
Yeah, that's what it would have been, yeah. Yeah. I remember one night when we played at Goodison and Paul Scholes cleared me out. I got sent off one night, Paul Scholes, when we... I think we beat them at Goodison 1-0, and he was fuming on the side, and I think he actually blamed me for diving that night or something like that, but Paul Scholes cleaned me out, got a straight red, I think, off the back of it. But there was nothing really, nothing. I mean, I think all his run-ins were with the fourth officials and the referees themselves. That's what he seemed to be over the years, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did. You mentioned that it's likely to be David Moyes. Brilliantly, it seems like the announcement's going to be made more or less just as we finish today's pod, but... By all accounts, David Moyes...
I think it's a pretty safe bet.
Safe bet, yeah. Okay. Now, some people reckon this is a strange choice, Kevin. You know the man having played under him and played with him as well.
Yeah, the reason why I think it fits the bill is because of the presence of Alex Ferguson that's going to be in the club. If you get someone like Mourinho in, or you get... there'll be probably a host of other managers, I think they'll be reluctant to go to Alex Ferguson. They'd probably say publicly, I'm speaking to him and I'm seeking his advice, but I don't think they'd really listen or go and seek him on a regular basis. David Moyes will definitely do that. He'll recognise the influence that Sir Alex has over that club, and he'll go and speak to him on a regular basis. So that's why I think that it fits it perfectly. He's done a brilliant job at Everton with what he's done, and I think it'd be hard for someone to replace him at Everton, equally as hard as it's going to be for someone to replace Ferguson at United.
Yeah, it's an interesting question he's going to be coming in. There's all sorts of names being mentioned, principally Roberto Martinez, but also Neil Lennon, Victor Pereira, manager of Porto, Martin O'Neill, Mark Hughes.
Threw his hat into the ring.
Yeah, he's played there as well, hasn't he? So.
And Phil Neville, of course.
Kevin, do you think it would be difficult for Moyes to be standing on the touchline opposite the Sir Alex Ferguson stand, with Sir Alex Ferguson sitting behind him in a director's box looking down? Is that not additional pressure a new manager could do without?
It's going to get that anyway, Barry. Whoever's going to come into that job, they're going to get that cloud over them, aren't they? That's going to be the case. But I think David Moyes will embrace that. I really do. I think he'll come out publicly straight away and probably say that I'm my own man, I'm doing it my way. And I'm sure Sir Alex Ferguson will let him do that. But privately, I'm sure that there'll be a lot of meetings, there'll be a lot of phone conversations. I mean, he's probably sought his advice over the years on many occasions over various things. And I think that's why it fits for me, because of that.
There will be people who say it's not a very spectacular choice, particularly for a club that seemed to be orientated towards going all out for another Champions League win. I know that was put down to Fergie's own agenda, but you know, obviously the European thing for a big worldwide brand like Man United, etc., Champions League is massive. Moyes, with no experience in that, not much experience in getting big spectacular performances out of his team as well. Is it possible that this is to do with the lack of budget from here on at Old Trafford?
How else do you get the experience of managing in the Champions League beyond actually doing it? Moyes has managed in Europe. I think in 2008, Everton were quite close to getting to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup and lost to Fiorentina. Right, but you can do that. But he's managing Everton. He's not managing Chelsea, right. Arsenal, Tottenham. I don't see at any point in the last few years where you could say Everton should have finished above any of those sides, and to have them up there on the budget that he's had, the players that he's had, and also is a remarkable achievement. And you know, you can look at it and say, okay, he hasn't won any trophies, but how much stock do you put into domestic trophies? Avram Grant nearly won the Champions League. Does that mean that he's a great manager? No. Harry Redknapp won an FA Cup. He's got one more trophy than Moyes has ever won. Mm. I'd rather have Moyes managing my club than Harry Redknapp.
Actually, how hard is he? Because he looks hard as nails, Kevin.
Yeah,
he does.
He has that streak. Definitely does that streak. I mean, I played alongside him when I first came to sign at Preston at 16. He came only a couple of months after me, but I was a young boy. I was a YTS then. Then when I was 18, I turned pro. I had 2 years professionally playing alongside him. And he had that way about him as a player. He did. He was a player coach when I was 19, I think, to 20 before I left. Player assistant manager, I think, actually. And he does have that way about him. And he was always destined to go on and manage, certainly Preston at that time. He was going to go on and manage greater and better than Preston, and that's turned out, of course, now it has. But he has that way about him. At Everton, when things were going wrong, my first season, we had a bad season, and he was under a lot of pressure after my first season. I think it was all 3 or 4, I think it was, under a lot of pressure. And that season, yeah, I think we've probably seen the worst of him from the dressing room, because he does have that streak in him. He does. It is like so many of the stories that you hear coming back from Sir Alex Ferguson. He has that way about him.
Right. Scarier than Sir Alex, do you think?
I've never experienced Sir Alex Ferguson, right. but it can be scary at times. Yeah, right. It can. Yeah.
Okay.
I think isn't the thing that everyone's sort of forgetting about Moyes coming to United is that he's already been at a big club for 11 yeah. years now. I mean, Everton's a huge club, and it's sort of through this media filter, we're not thinking of them at all, but he's done that. So he knows the weight of expectation. Obviously, that's not as big as Manchester United, but it's big enough. And I just wonder actually whether the only question marks remain really that he's, because he's never had a huge budget, and when he has spent big money, questionably it's not always worked out for him. So
he's had Fellaini that's going to happen. Probably his record signing $15 million that's worked out well.
That's true.
His big signings that he has brought in, I think in general have worked out, but there'd been one or two. But that's the case at any club. You can look at Sir Alex Ferguson in that, and some of the signings that he's brought in at big money that have gone wrong. So that's a gamble that any manager's going
to
take.
But it'll just be interesting to see what he does when he's got a proper big pot to spend and can mould his own team.
Plus, he's a Scot. Scot.
He is, yes.
Yeah, right. Well, no,
so well done to him.
All the best managers, and a lot of the best pundits are Scottish too.
Yep.
That's something about that voice. Somebody said something to you in Scottish. Whew, you listen.
I've heard this is the case.
Yep.
It's never been first-hand experience.
All right, now you've said it. I'll take your word for it. Okay, cool. Everton, well, it's a bit of a disruption for them as they go into this crucial game with West Ham.
Is it crucial?
It is. Well, kind of. But it is a big disruption for them.
Of course it is, yeah. And
but they knew it was coming.
Well, as far as I know, there's quite a lot of Everton fans who won't be that sorry to see David Moyes go. Mm. I know there's one in the office here anyway who can't wait to see the back of him, which I think is a bit odd.
What is it he didn't like about Moyes?
He thinks that Moyes' tactics are too negative, and he thinks that Moyes has an uncanny ability of getting strikers in and turning them into non-goal scorers, to wit, playing Nikita Jelovic on the wing, playing Stephen Naismith on the wing. They don't score goals anymore. And
very impressive if he manages to do that to Van Persie.
Well, yeah, it would be quite impressive if he put Van Persie out on the wing and stopped him scoring goals. But and then there's this record he has of never beating one of the traditional top four sides away from home
slightly,
in 40 attempts or something.
Slightly skewed, because he has got a very good record at City, who have been up there as well.
Well, that's what I said, the traditional top four.
He has been able to get a result away at City when they've been challenging for slightly the league and the top four. So.
Mm.
And I just think that Everton, a grand old club, and they're sort of punching above their financial weight, but they do seem like a club that could do with sort of having the paddles applied and maybe being electroshocked back into, the existence, and they could go one way or the other, up
right.
or down.
Right, good. Exciting times then at Goodison Park as well. The other good thing about Moyes, frankly, is the fact that he's not Mourinho, which is possibly really good news. What does it all mean for Rooney? Eh? Because what's the latest on that story? Wayne Rooney wanted to leave. Sir Alex's departure, does that change that?
Does he still want to leave?
I don't know.
Well, it said everyone's saying that he asked for a transfer 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
The timing of it being broke, is it? That's the thing. It coincides with the Sir Alex Ferguson going. But I was asked about that one. I think that it would have been a perfect one for Wayne Rooney to get himself back going again, scoring goals, like 20-plus goals again. I think that David Moyes would have got the best out of him. I really do think that. They had a bit of a bust-up when he left, but that's all been put to bed now. That has been put to bed. They've shook hands, and I think Wayne Rooney's come out and said that he recognises now what a good coach and manager he was.
Why do you think Moyes would have got the best out of Rooney then?
Well, I think that he would have. The reason why I think that David Moyes had him at Everton, of course, and Wayne wasn't in the best of form when he left to go to the Euros at Everton, because we were a struggling team. He was never going to get the best of form out of him. I think he did score about 10 goals that season for us, but he didn't have the best of form. But I think that it's just a little bit of David Moyes knowing him, knowing exactly what he's like, knowing his personality, certainly from a young age. And I think that somebody else going in might not have recognised him gone straight up to Wayne, put everything to bed, put it all to bed, what's gone on in the past, and David Moyes would be big enough to do that. I think that David Moyes, because of the relationship that they had in the past, I think he would have got the best. I really do think that, but whether
maybe he still will. Yeah.
Hopefully, I hope he does. I think he's, again, it's the perfect fit, but we'll see.
But tactically, there's not something about the way Moyes approaches his football that fits better with Rooney.
No, I just think the level that Wayne Rooney's at, that it's more about that personal touch. And when you get into the calibre of players at Man United, the tactics are there, and there is a certain element of tactics, but it's about getting the players right and on the pitch and in the right frame of mind, and he would have done that.
Super duper. Of course, there's also talk of Ronaldo coming in, which would be very exciting for David Moyes. Not sure how they worked that one out, but...
Did you see Ronaldo's celebration last night?
I didn't, after the extraordinary 6-2.
He scored... Ashley Williams should watch, because he scored there was a back pass, and so he's one of those indirect free kicks, and instead of blasting it out for 3 points in rugby, Ronaldo curled it into the top corner and just ran away banging his chest and shouting in Spanish, I'm staying here.
Wow, I want to see that now.
Yeah.
Right, straight after the pod. For Sir Alex, a goodbye to Old Trafford this weekend at home to Swansea, so a swan song in a very real sense. That'll be an emotional afternoon.
It will, and yeah, you kind of feel sorry for Swansea because they're very much just turning up to get absolutely smashed.
Oh, you think they'll send him off in with a big steamrolling?
Yeah. I'd imagine.
Especially that Swansea, although the Wigan match might prove otherwise, for most of the run-in since the Carling Cup final have been on the beach.
Absolutely.
Which is understandable.
Capital One Cup final. Good. That is it then for today's extra special Fergie salute. There's more pod fun coming up after this, though, as we look at the midweek games. Now, Kevin, it's good that you're in, because you actually watched all the football midweek, that featured Wigan pulling yet another of their late-season surprises, eh? Just when you expect at least from the Latics, they go and lose 3-2 at home to a Swansea side that looked, frankly, off on their holes.
Yeah, I don't think Swansea did a lot to win the game as well. I think Wigan give them the win. They were really poor at the back, poor goals to concede from them. First half, Wigan didn't play particularly well, but they were kind of cruising through it. Swansea were quite bad through the first half. Went 1-0 up, and you thought Wigan were just going to cruise through the game, win 1 or 2-0, no problems at all. And then they started the second half really, really, really bad. Couldn't defend the line, couldn't clear the ball, misplaced passes, and they just allowed Swansea to come at them.
The final goal is a real treat for lovers of good defending.
Yeah, I know. It was it Maloney and MacArthur? MacArthur dropped so deep, virtually onto the line, not in sync with his back four, and then he seemed to sprint out late on. Him and Maloney got in an awful mix-up, and then Dyer mishit it, bounced over Joel in the goal, and who was it getting back on the line? Caldwell, wasn't it, trying to get back on the line to clear it? It was just a... huge errors, really, wasn't it, for the goal? But again, it just puts them in trouble. And I think everybody expects them to win that game. If you're going to pick a team, I said it before the game, if you pick a team that you want to target to win, you've probably got two or three teams in the Premier League now. Swansea were one of them.
Yeah.
And they just didn't turn up.
Yeah, so the weekend's game against West Brom, when they won, but Bosajor went out injured, maybe that was actually the turning point in a negative sense. The fellow came in at left back. What was his name, Jacob?
Espinosa.
Yeah, that looks like trouble in store there. Indeed so, because they're now 3 points. It's not over. I mean, they're 3 points, one win away from Sunderland, Norwich and Newcastle. Saints and others, well, Saints just won above those three. And interesting games coming up this weekend. They look quite easy for that trio. Norwich are going to be playing West Brom at home. Sunderland host Saints. Newcastle are at QPR. We'll talk more about those matches later on, because, of course, for Wigan this weekend, it's not the Premier League. It's the FA Cup final. Barry, are ESPN doing enough build-up for this, in your opinion?
I have not seen a moment's build-up from ESPN,
really?
Because I don't have it.
Do you not?
I'm not a subscriber.
If you did have it and you switched on at 8 in the morning...
Oh, really?
Yeah, you would see the start of their coverage.
And will you be featuring?
I'll be on at 8:30 with the lovely Kelly Cates.
Ah, excellent.
We'll have an hour and a half. That'll be from 8:30 to 10, which will only leave,
so
what,
it's like sort of
7 hours, Saturday 7 and a quarter hours.
Saturday morning, James, yeah?
Saturday morning.
You might see a guest with you along there as well, yeah.
Are you on,
yes,
Kevin?
Yes,
I thought
I'd see.
What time are you on?
8:45, I think it is, yeah.
Oh, no, you were on the 8:30 show. We're going to work together. This is so exciting.
Wow. Yes.
Right.
So two of...
Cool.
This is media.
Yeah, last year it was very. Last year I did the kitchens with Robbie Savage. And there was an incident involving whipped cream. Yeah. So
bring your penny.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since he's retired, and admittedly there wasn't quite as much fanfare about Kevin's retirement as there has been about Fergie's.
Right.
But you're never off the telly.
Yeah,
you're ubiquitous.
Is that good or bad, though, Barry? That's what
Well, it's admirable that you're sort of forging a new career and quite a good one, you know, you're as a successful pundit. But
for example,
there's going to be a backlash soon.
Yeah. Yeah. You're saying you can be too ubiquitous?
Well, you pulled it off, yeah.
Yeah, right. I think I can get away with it now till next season, can't I? And then that's it, season's over, then you've got to make decisions.
Yeah, Jimbo Kelly and Killer's breakfast chat.
Absolutely. It's terrific.
Your descent into Alan Partridge territory just...
I got there first. Anyway, about that game, which a mere 7.25 hours after we go off air will take place... City can win it for the second time. Are City going to win it, or can those Latics spring a surprise again?
You can't. You couldn't rule them out, could you, Wigan? They played against it. You can't, because they played against City a few weeks ago, and they dominated him for about an hour, 70 minutes, totally Very dominated true. Him. And then Joe Hart's pulled off two or three worldy saves, kept them in the game. And then was it Tevez, wasn't it, that scored the winner? So you couldn't rule them out, but you're fully expecting that City, if they turn up, they should win the game.
Well, how many? Last seven meetings between these two teams... Man City won all seven of them, scoring 13 goals, conceding none, nil goals.
I mean, I think if you could conceivably have the funniest FA Cup final of all time here. It's if both teams, you know, at their calamitous worst are capable of all sorts of slapstick, and we'll have Gary Caldwell, you know, slicing the ball into his own net, Joe Hart throwing them in to his own net. But yeah, on form, obviously. You'd expect a City win, but I hope Wigan do themselves justice, either in victory or defeat.
Right, just a note on that Joe Hart thing. Would it be Pantelimon because of, you know...
Oh, of course. Cup run, yes, sorry, my mistake.
No, that's okay. Maybe he can, you know, contribute a comedy area of his own. There won't be any Figueroa, I'm presuming, a Beausejour out and Alcaraz in doubt as well. Yeah. So, yikes. And Aguero's going to be wearing pink spotty boots. Is that does anybody know about this? Producer Ben supplied that gem.
Yeah, I've seen this new boot. I think they're...
Oh, sorry.
Can you say the sports manufacturer, can you? Can you say that?
Yeah.
Puma, aren't they? I think the Puma, there's a new boot they brought out, and they literally... I've seen the advertisement for it. It's just a brand new boot they've come out, built for speed or something
like that. Right, and the spots help with that, do they?
Apparently it helps with striking a ball more cleanly.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it?
Interesting.
That's what it says.
All right. Do boots make a difference?
No. Yeah.
No.
Of course they do.
Come on, get out of here.
He's played football.
Yeah, but...
Do they?
No, do they make a difference?
Of course. Why would they? No.
I remember there was an American footballer who used to wear black boots because it makes you look like you're running slower, which means that, you know, the defensive end or whatever it is you're up against would actually miscalculate your velocity and you'd streak past them.
Yeah, I think I always used to say when I was playing, if you ever see me in white boots, you can shoot me. I always say these. And then all of a sudden I got to about 30, started to try and feel young, so I started to wear white boots. So.
White, yeah.
Yeah, and you do actually feel a little bit quicker. My legs are gone by that stage. I could never move anywhere, but I was wearing the... And you do, you don't know, maybe looking down at them, suddenly feel a little bit fresher or something, I don't know.
And would you be wearing white socks with the white boots?
Depends on the team.
Yeah, it depends.
Well, that's what I'm...
Right, sometimes we would have done. Some of the teams...
Cause the
first 90% is in your mind, though, Kevin.
Exactly. So, that might just give you that little bit of mental advantage.
Absolutely. Cool. Boot chat. Tick. Scott, what do you think of coloured boots?
Yeah, I'm all for them. What colour socks will Aguero be wearing with the pink and white spotted?
Who's in blue? Who's in the away strip for that game?
I don't know. Kevin, you played for Wigan, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's massive them being at Wembley in the FA Cup final.
Yeah, it was the first time in the Cup semi, wasn't it? First time at Wembley, in an FA Cup anyway. But it was huge for them. And I think if they win this weekend, they'll be the first team to win every domestic trophy. In a final. Sorry, that was wrong. The Carling Cup. They've played in the Johnson's Paint. They've played in, I think they've played in one of the older competitions as well that was played
Saint
at Wembley.
Data Systems.
Something like that anyway. But they've played, they're the first
so
team.
So they would be the first?
I think they're the first team to do that. I read that this week, yeah.
All right. So that's the real history in the making this week. Interesting. Sean Maloney and, you know, McManaman, they've got some little gems, haven't they, Wigan?
Yeah, I think they're obviously a decent enough side, although possibly not decent enough to avoid relegation. But the weird thing is, everyone was talking about before the defeat against Swansea that the FA Cup final might actually derail the bid to escape relegation. Well, it looks like they're going to get relegated now. So in a weird way, you could spin this round and say, well, maybe they'll just throw a little bit more at the cup final as opposed to just treating it as a slight afterthought and the hope of staying up, which, you know, they should do anyway. It's the cup final. Mm. It'd be much if I was a Wigan fan, I would much rather win the cup final. I wouldn't care less if I got relegated. You can always come back up, but you might never get a chance to win the cup again.
That's so very true. So very true. All right, well, 8 o'clock Saturday, the build-up begins, so make sure you're on board for that. Top four race. Wow, big game on Wednesday evening at Stamford Bridge as Chelsea took on Spurs and a 2-2 draw. Chelsea twice going ahead, twice getting pegged back by Spurs, who celebrated wildly at the end. All sorts of interesting things here. Adebayor, for example.
What a goal.
Yeah.
And the touch for the second as well.
Yeah, he hasn't really been earning his corn this season, to say the least, whoever's paying it, whether it's City or Spurs. And, yeah, just a reminder of how good he can be. His goal was just sensational. Admittedly, Chelsea's defenders made life pretty easy for him, but, you know, what a finish. It was beautiful.
Terrific. Fair result, do you think, Jacob?
Just about. It was a strange game in that, for 60, 65 minutes, you're looking in it and going, there isn't, apart from Gareth Bale, there's probably not a single Spurs player who you would want to put in Chelsea's side. And that was pretty obvious, I think, during that time when Chelsea were dominating their better side. And I don't think that they should be in a battle for the top four. I think they should be challenging for the league, along with City and United. But they're tired, and the substitutions didn't really work. They lost Hazard, they lost a bit of momentum. Chelsea fans didn't like it when Benny Yoon came on for Oscar with about 10 minutes to go. And Andre Villas-Boas, actually, I think he came out with a lot of credit from that game, from the way that he did change it. The way I think he sort of outthought Rafa Benitez a little bit. And that substitution for Gylfi Sigurdsson, for, I can't remember who he came on for, but Spurs were the better side after that, the quicker side, more energetic. And Sigurdsson obviously scored a very good goal, which he's made a difference to them coming off the bench every so often.
He came on for Lennon. Oh, interesting thing about this game is the fact that Bale didn't score, but they did win, which statistically is an anomaly.
They drew. They drew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, that leaves it as...
Bale didn't have a great game, though, last night. But that's the thing, is that they have...
He was due one bad game, though, wasn't he? One in 50 or whatever it would
be. But it's easier to crowd out someone like Gareth Bale if you're Chelsea and you know that you've got, you know, equivalent of, say, three Gareth Bales. You've got Mata, Hazard and Oscar, and they've only got one of him. Mm. You know, that's the problem for Tottenham, is they need more like that.
Right, well, that means that Spurs are no longer in control of their own destiny vis-a-vis the top four. They are away at Stoke this weekend and then follow that up with Sunderland at home on the final day. Chelsea... Ooh, they're at Aston Villa. Little bit of revenge in store here, perhaps. Villa got beaten 8-0 by Chelsea.
Well, Villa's, they've transformed it. Paul Lambert's transformed it, hasn't he, in the last couple of months? They've had Benteke. I mean, what a player he's looked all season, but he's probably carried them a little bit as well at times. But probably safe now, aren't they? That's the thing. You know, they've had so many really good results, 40 points. I can't see Wigan overhauling them with 35 points, winning the last two games, so they're probably more or less safe, a bit of relaxed. That's going to be the key game for Wigan, playing them last game of the season, but outstanding performances over the last few months by Villa.
Who do you think's going to go, who's going to be the odd team out from the top four?
From the top four? I actually thought Tottenham would have qualified, but they've just dipped, haven't they, in recent weeks, so they've not been as consistent. They had been. I think Arsenal might do it now. I think it could be the top four as it stands now, could stay like that, yeah.
Scott?
Yeah, I think Spurs will miss out.
Oi, Barry. Jacob.
I think Spurs are probably going to miss out now.
Well, funny enough, Jacob and I were discussing this before we came into the pod. I think Benitez has done a remarkable job at Chelsea, and he disagreed. But Chelsea, they've had 11 games in the last month and won 7 of them, drawn 2 and lost 2. And still he gets booed. Chelsea fans were booing both managers last night, which was
good.
Interesting state of affairs.
But they just don't like him. It's not really to do so much with his what he's done as much as who he is. You know, it's a Chelsea Liverpool thing, and there is that rivalry there. And you know, he's the anti-Mourinho, isn't he? From that friction that was there in 2005. And I don't know, I think that when he took over, they were challenging for the league. They're now 20 points off the title. They didn't win the Capital One Cup. They lost to Swansea in the semi-final. They lost to City in the semi-final of the FA Cup. In the Europa League, they've played Steaua Bucharest, Sparta Prague, and Rubin Kazan and Basel. You know, they're the European champions.
Right. Great work, Jacob. Kevin, you were just warming up to tell us about the bottom three there and who you think it's Wigan, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, the only one it is, I think they could catch Norwich. That's their only hope, I think, now. I think Newcastle might have enough with the games that they've got left. They need to... I mean, I think it might not even come down to them having to get something out of Arsenal. I think if they can play against Arsenal and not get beat too heavily... I don't think Norwich are going to win the last two games. And I think if Norwich lose Saturday, there'll be really a lot of pressure on them going into that last game. And I think Wigan will beat Villa the last game of the season. So then it'll be up to Norwich to try and pick up a point out of that last game.
So of those three, Norwich are at home to West Brom. They've only had one win in nine.
Yeah.
And they've been leaking goals all over the place.
I think they play West Brom, isn't it? Is it West Brom?
Yeah, West Brom. And then they're away to Man City on the final day.
Yes, yeah. So, again, I mean, if... West Brom, nothing to play for, I suppose you'd say. So it's a fixture I was talking about before with Wigan playing against Swansea. You want a team like that.
Hmm.
But the way they've been playing, they've been struggling. So I think if Norwich do lose this weekend, Wigan obviously have that Villa game to make up, the Arsenal game to make up midweek.
Hmm.
Can they? I don't think they're going to pick anything up at the Emirates, but they could.
Well, they did last year.
Yeah. Well, I know that's where you wouldn't write them off about actually doing that. But if they go there and don't get beat too heavily, I think they'll beat Villa the last game of the season, so the pressure will be right on Norwich then.
And they're at home to Villa last time.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
right, it's a big one, isn't it?
Why are you so sure they'll beat Villa?
I just think we always used to beat Villa. Yeah. I think they'll beat Villa.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's Norwich, Newcastle and Sunderland are all on the same points. Newcastle are at QPR. Is that a good fixture to have at this point?
Again, you know, you're looking at it, they're down, but there'll be a lot of players in there. They're probably playing for contracts, playing to get away from the club as well at QPR. So be a tough one for them. Be a tough one. I can't see it.
Have you seen QPR?
I know. I've seen them. I mean, I seen them play against Wigan a few weeks ago, didn't they? They actually played quite well against Wigan. It was about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
When Maloney scored the last-minute free kick. They played quite well that day.
That was when they were still going for it, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they really were going for it back in those days.
Yeah.
just one win in seven on the road for Newcastle. So, you know, equally, they could find themselves in trouble. Mm. And Sunderland, well, they're not out of danger yet because they're at home to Saints.
So another of Kevin's old sides.
Absolutely.
An emerging theme here. Struggling team.
So Sunderland basically are 1 point below Southampton, who haven't been on a good run at all.
Yeah.
They did get a point with just 10 men against Stoke on Monday night after our most recent Football Weekly. But no, Craig Gardner, he'll be out to all the other people who are missing because I presume Sessegnon... Is out. Did you get three-game ban?
Three games.
A lot of players.
I mean, I think Danny Rose is going to be... he won't be able to... The loan agreement that he has, he can't play.
For the final game.
The final game at Tottenham.
Right.
So that one's in place as well. And we worked it out. I think they've only got 12 fit players in that last game, or 12 eligible players in that last game that they'll have to pick from, not including the younger players that they can bring in.
Hmm. So they need 11.
Well, that's true. Hmm.
There won't be too much chopping and James, no.
What's it like down there in a horrible relegation scrap? Is it always nagging away at you, or is it something you just sort of... Bleh?
Yeah, the most memorable one was that Sheffield United last day of the season when we had to go to Bramall Lane with Wigan to stay up with 3 points behind, and any win would have just kept us up. And we were probably written off going into that last week. We were dead and buried. We'd been beaten by Middlesbrough the week before, and that was it, game over. But we had a really good week. Paul Jewell, I don't know if he was resigned to the factors, but he didn't seem it to us. He seemed like he had every confidence in it. It's got us right. We had a really good week's training, and we went to Bramall Lane full of confidence. And I felt going into that game we were going to go and win it. I felt really, really confident, and we did, and stayed up, and we were lucky in the end.
Mm.
But I think overall, the last few months of the season, it's a grind. It is a grind because... If you start well in a game and you're full of confidence, you're playing well, as soon as you concede, it just seems to drain. You can see it yourself when you're watching games. Visibly, you look at a team, the energy and, you know, the endeavour or whatever it would be out of the team just seems to disappear totally. And that is what you find with the team that's at the bottom. As soon as you concede, it seems to be the world comes crashing in around you.
Hmm. Wigan are quite remarkable like that. I mean, everyone says about how their spirit... The nonchalant sometimes is a bit of a negative thing at the back especially, but they never seem to...
I think that was the key to the night they played against Swansea. They were probably too slack. They just give too many balls away at the back. They were trying to play overplay, I think, at times, and that's what cost them.
Mm. All right. Are you a fan of De Canio?
De Canio, brilliant, yeah. I think he's been great, yeah. Really,
All right, so Wigan going down. Jacob?
My prediction, I was looking through the predictions that were the Guardian writers were making
at the
start of the season, yeah. Mm. And I had Norwich, Reading and Swansea. Let's go down.
Norwich, Reading and Swansea?
At the start of the season, yeah. And so I'll be happy with 2 out of 3.
Right.
I think Wigan will go down.
Right. Scott?
Yeah, Wigan.
There you go. That's it for part two. Coming up very shortly, some posts, the odd playoff and Portugal. Wow, how exciting is this as we begin part three with the news that, Kevin, you were there in that extraordinary Billy Davis pre-game, post-game press conference.
Yeah, he came out and he started to talk at first and he was asked why he's doing the post-match, pre-match. And he said, basically, I've got bigger fish to fry.
Right.
That's what he said. So,
and I think he used the word respect several times as well.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he said, I respect you and respect the club. And he was saying a lot, but... That was the thing that stood out for me. Bigger fish to fry and kind of walked off, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Which fish were these in particular? The sponsors?
The supporters, sponsors, chairman, board of directors. They were the people he said he had a priority to speak to after the game and he wouldn't be able to find time to come in and do his post-match press conference.
Remarkable. And this was a Forest team that was still in with the chance of the playoffs very much.
If they'd have won the game, they'd have been in the playoffs because they were ahead of Leicester at the time.
Yeah. Instead, it is Leicester who play this evening, Thursday evening, against Watford. Friday sees Crystal Palace in the big Eagle-Seagull match of nastiness against Brighton. And then Sunday, well, then it's Watford, Leicester, and then Monday, Brighton, Crystal Palace, and the big Seagull Eagle match of nastiness. And then the final. When's the final?
Do you think a big seagull could take out a small eagle in a fight?
Well, I think it's a pack hunter, the seagull, isn't it? I think that it would be maybe one brave eagle and then a whole flock of seagulls who would then.
Would they have like extravagant mullets?
Yeah.
Actually, Kevin, one thing we've discussed before in the pod, I don't know if you were listening at the time, is who would win a fight, Everton, say, your era, and the Pogues?
What, you've got to put four members up, is that what you
think? Well,
no,
say eight, there's probably nine to 11 Pogues on a good day. So they would be allowed to use their instruments as weapons.
What can we use? Our pink boots?
You just get, you know, you're unarmed, you've got your boots.
you've got Thomas Gravesen.
He was not a hard man, Tommy Gravesen. Everyone thought that. He wasn't a hard man, Tommy.
No.
Lee Carsey, something like that. David Weir, Alan Stubbs. I'd have them up my back, yeah, definitely.
Are you a lover or a fighter, Kevin?
Big Dunk, I'm a lover, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I'm a total lover, yeah.
Good news. Speaking of which, Pedro Pinto, I believe, joins us now on the line.
Hello there.
Hi, Pedro. Pedro, first things first, who's the hardest man in Portuguese soccer?
Right now?
Yeah.
I would say Pep.
Yeah, it's a good shout. Lots of things we want to talk to you about. Where are you, by the way?
I've just come back from Manchester. I'm in London right now.
Oh, right, okay. Was there something big happening up there?
Not really. Just a small story of some Scottish manager who's decided to step down.
Right, global news. And
you wouldn't have heard of him. You wouldn't have heard of him.
you were covering this for CNN, yes?
Yes, that is correct.
All right. Well, many questions, Pedro, with all these developing stories in world football. Some people today talking about Ronaldo maybe heading back to Old Trafford. I don't know if you've got any insight on that.
I don't have much insight on that. I think it could happen because his contract runs out in 2 years, and since he hasn't re-signed, it's obviously speculation that Real Madrid would want to make some money back makes sense. But as far as inside news is concerned, I can't shed any light on that because that's something Jorge Mendes will try to use as well to get Ronaldo a better deal in Madrid because I personally don't think he'll want to leave Madrid without winning the Champions League there.
Right, absolutely. Okay, in the meantime, you must be very excited about the events coming up this Sunday in Portugal as Benfica take on Porto.
I'm super excited about this weekend's game. This is the top two teams historically in the country, separated by 2 points with two games to play. Benfica drew their last game, which was a big setback, because if they had won it at home against Estoril, then they could have lost the game at Porto and still be crowned champions. They've only won once in Porto for the league in the last 20 years. So they say they're going up there to win the game to be crowned champions, but history is really not on their side. I'm really looking forward to this game. Probably the biggest game in Portuguese football in the last decade, without wanting to exaggerate. Yeah.
Wow, that's huge. Benfica with the draw are obviously sitting pretty for the final game, but haven't lost a game all season.
No, neither side has in the league. Both sides have avoided defeat, which is quite an incredible accomplishment. You're talking about teams that, if you talk about Benfica, the main issue there is that there are a lot of tired legs at the Stadium of Light right now. They've reached the final of the Europa League. They're in the final of the Portuguese Cup. It could be one of those situations where they win a historic treble, or they become known as the biggest chokers of the last decade as well, because if they lose all three games, then you could end up the season empty-handed. And, you know, the name of Benfica's coach is Jesus, or Jesus, so to speak. So, I mean, if he loses everything, there'll be no miracles as far as maybe him staying on next season is concerned.
Right, okay. Also, they'll crucify him, and he's not nailed on to win it either, etc. What I also wanted to ask you about, Pedro, was the extraordinary team. We've mentioned them a couple of times. We don't really know how they've done it. The extraordinary team, Pacos Ferreira, from this tiny town to the north, is it, of Porto, 8,000 people, who are there in third place, heading for Champions League football.
Yeah, it's a soft C. It's Passos.
Oh, Passos. Ferreira. Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. You're not expected to know that. The stadium capacity is only a little over 5,000 people, so it'll be amazing if they play in the Champions League for the first time ever.
But they wouldn't
How have they done it?
They wouldn't play there, would they?
Well, they may, or they could use one of the Euro 2004 stadiums that haven't really been used up in the north. Maybe the Boavista Stadium. Maybe they'd use that. But it's a good point. It looks like it'd be too small for them to host games there. Maybe they play the qualifiers there and then move into the bigger stadium if they get to the group stage. But they've done it. Look, it's a combination of factors. First of all, Sporting had their worst season in recent memory. They're the third big club in Portugal. Braga struggled as well. Guimarães also didn't have a particularly strong campaign. So this team, very plucky, they draw a lot of games. They don't win by big margins. They kind of edge out 2-1, 1-0 victories, and then they draw a lot of games away. They've been able to stay up there pretty much all season. People are expecting them to drop down, but they've stayed up there, and they're very close to finishing third and clinching a spot in the Champions League qualifiers. They've played in Europe twice before, and the UEFA Cup or Europa League as well. But this would be a huge story. No one outside of Portugal would recognize any of their players. They've got actually quite a few promising young footballers that our national team manager, Paulo Bento, should have a look at. But very surprising stories. One of the Cinderella stories that we should look out for if they finish third and then can get into the Millionaire League of Europe.
Brilliant. Pedro, thank you so much for that. We'll let you get back to your news gathering activities, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
I look forward to seeing you soon as well.
Thank you very much, CNN's Pedro Pinto. Well, that's amazing. Katsuo Bushi was asking about the old Passos Ferreira, as of course they're known. Other people posting in Ham Footed says, "I hate to be a pedant." You got it wrong. It wasn't Jay Simpson. It was Ahmed El Mohammadi who was doing that dance, when Hull got there.
I hate to be a pedant, but anyone who begins a sentence with the words, "I hate to be a pedant," quite clearly doesn't hate being a pedant at all.
Right. Producer Ben, meantime, saying, "Was El Mohammadi walking like an Egyptian?" that rustling noise is me coming to the end of available material. Although we never mention Wolves looking for a new manager. Darren Ferguson, I've heard, is being linked with this position, who would be their fourth manager, I think, since they sacked Mick.
Yeah, it was funny watching. I was watching the Football League show the other night, and Dean Saunders was on doing his post relegation interview, and he's looked on the precipice for a few weeks now. He was nearly broke down a couple of weeks ago in his interview, but he was saying, you know, we need players in who want to play for Wolves and who aren't carrying baggage, blah blah blah. And when I build my team and full of players who want to play for me and play for these fans and play for this club, and you're just kind of looking at him on the TV going, you're not going to be there by Tuesday. Mm. So Wolves have got themselves in an awful mess. And
Kevin, you're enjoying this a little bit too much.
Yeah, entertaining, yeah. Very good. That's what I get when I was out, when I was running, listening to this. Yeah, it was very good.
Right? there's no anti-Wolves bias then, or anti-Dean Saunders bias? That
no, probably a little bit of anti-Wolves, former West Brom player. Right. There, so yeah, but no, I can't understand when Wolves appointed him now to sack him, whatever, 3 months later, four months later, whatever it is. Surely they must have had a plan B in place, whatever it is, and they don't seem to
have. Would they not be on plan F or G?
Yeah,
right,
probably right. You know, they let Mick McCarthy go, and I think when they let Mick go, it was after that really heavy defeat, and I was at that game, that Wolves-West Brom game, got really badly at home against the local rivals, and obviously Mick left off the back of that.
A lot of fans were calling for him to go at the time as well.
There was. So I can probably understand it to an extent, but, you know, when they did get relegated, you look back now and you think, would Mick have done a much? I'm sure they wouldn't have got relegated under Mick McCarthy. I'm sure of that.
Yeah,
I was actually out for a pint with my West Brom supporting mate last night. I mentioned that Kevin was coming on the podcast today, so he wanted me to say that he loved having you at West Brom. Absolutely loved it.
There you go. Now, we did do your Championship playoffs before. We never mentioned the League One playoff final, which of course got is Brentford against Yeovil Town.
It is, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Confirmation there, and the Bees won a pulsating 5-4 penalty shootout against Swindon.
I think everyone's kind of rooting for Brentford after their, you know, horrible...
That penalties, etc. Mm. And how about Bradford? Everyone, are they rooting for Bradford against Northampton in the League 2 final?
Well, for all the games they've played and all the success and adventures they've had this season, who would begrudge Bradford, apart from Cobblers fans, obviously, their place in League One should they win that playoff final?
Well, there you go. Well, finally then, producer Ben writes in to say, Kevin, how will Hull fare back in the Premier League, and how exciting was it playing under Phil Brown?
Very exciting playing the Phil Brown, it was. We had a few little adventures along the way. Yeah,
we did.
There was one or two interesting team talks and everything.
Everyone remembers the team talks.
Yeah. I wasn't actually there when they won on the pitch. I'd signed just after that. I came in the January. I think that was around Christmas time. I came in January. Only a few weeks after that. But it was a good time. Yeah.
Were you doing that funny training time. Run when somebody tried to jump off the bridge? Were you there that day?
Yes, I was there. Yeah, right. It never happened. Total nonsense, and not, it was just the best story ever when it broke as well. Yeah. We're thinking, who's this guy that's apparently jumping off the bridge? There was nobody going to jump off the bridge.
Right.
But it was a great story, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
Yeah.
Did you ever have daytime TV host coming in to give you a halftime talk?
No, never had that. No, I saw Jeremy Carl this week down at Southend. Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah. Good entertainment. No, but we never had that.
You saw him down there?
No.
Oh,
no,
you saw him down there.
I saw that he was down there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Super.
Comical, yeah.
So you're a visionary then, Phil Brown?
Visionary, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. And what about Hull under Steve Bruce back in the Premier League?
Yeah, he's done a brilliant job, hasn't he? I think realistically, if they'd have got anywhere near the playoffs this season, I think that was the goal for them to get into the playoffs, to get them automatic promotion, was a wonderful achievement. And I think that they're going to need a lot of money to spend. They'll need to invest in the squad heavily to compete, but I think that the right signs are coming out from the chairman up there, saying he wants to spend money, he wants to get the club into Europe. You know, we've heard all these before, but I think there will be money to spend.
Mm. Does sound a little bit familiar, that.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you at Hull at the time, Brown, and Fabregas had the row?
Oh, yeah.
He got upset with Fabregas for wearing clothes.
Yeah, he came on in jeans and a t-shirt or something, didn't he? Yeah. He ran onto the pitch after the game when he wasn't playing. I was cup-tied that night, but I was watching that on TV, and I think he allegedly spat at one of the coaching staff.
Yeah. Okay, final question then, just to eke out a little bit more from you. Leicester, Watford, Crystal Palace, Brighton, who's going to go up with Hull and Cardiff?
I fancy Brighton. I think they're in the best form, yeah. I think they're in good form. I fancy them. Watford, only because of maybe the fallout that they've had. But there's a few teams that Leicester have been in horrendous form, but huge lifts after beating Forest last weekend. So I think they'll be relishing it. Good chance. They spent a lot of money as well. I just think Brighton. I've got a little sneaky feeling for Brighton here.
All right. Okay. Exciting.
You know what I was saying this week as well, but in 1998, the bottom five teams in the Football League were Swansea, Brighton and Hove Albion, Cardiff, Doncaster Rovers and Hull City. They were the bottom five teams in the Football League.
In the fourth tier of
English football, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that this week. It's unbelievable, really, considering that Donny have just got promoted as well, and you could have four of those five teams in the Premier League next season.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Crazy world of football.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right, well, that brings us to the end of this very, very, very special, for all sorts of reasons, edition of Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back to our normal selves on Monday, so do join us for that. Friday, we'll bring you a special press roundup, no doubt with a little bit of continental reaction to Sir Alex and his departure. But for now, it's many thanks, Barry Glendinning.
Cheers.
To producer Ben. Scott Murray.
Thanks, Jake.
Jacob Steinberg, who's actually had to go back and pick up the minute by minute, because you're no telling what might happen on that Sir Alex leaving story. And, of course, to Kevin Kilbant, many thanks for coming in here.
Thank you very much. It's an honour. Yeah.
Nice one, Kevin. And from all of us here in the meantime, goodbye.